The following podcast is a work of fiction. All characters are the creation of Peter Williams. Any resemblance to someone living or dead is purely coincidental. Thank you.
When we last left off, Warren had passed out at the cottage, his partner Jay rushing him off to St. Teresa's. Meanwhile, the chief was finishing up with Mayor Simmons at City Hall. As he emerges from his meeting, what does he spy? Is it Agnes riding a red-nosed reindeer? Or maybe a towering snowman trashing the city? No, while those would be unique and definitely interesting, he spies just plain old Ben. Ben Cullen, the man whom this story is named after. Before we begin, I must warn you that there is no graphic violence this week. Indeed, sad. And while the writer did plenty of cursing while recording this, there is very little of that in here, too. Annoying. No, this week is a bridge or filler episode to push us along towards the main event. But please keep in mind that this podcast still may not be suitable for those under the age of 13. Now, once again, we return to the story on a Tuesday, a Tentacle Tuesday, and Chapter 7, Ben Cullen.
Chief Reynolds stepped out of City Hall and onto the cement porch and looked out over the steps and down at the small city of Montgomery. St. Teresa's illuminated the south side like a beacon. Main Street had several utility trucks working, setting up the holiday lights that would soon adorn the holiday parade. A cold late autumn wind ran through him and his coat, scattering some dry leaves along the steps and out onto the street below. A lone figure moved amongst the street lamps, pushing a shopping cart. It was Ben Cullen. He was rummaging through the trash, looking for cans and bottles. The chief rushed down the steps to catch up with him. "Hey, Ben," he called out. The old man looked up at him, surprised. He gave the chief a mostly toothless grin. The chief could see he was shivering. Taking off his long black police coat and putting it on the frail man's shoulders, he could see the pained look of hopelessness in the old man's eyes. Ben began to take it off and give it back to him, shaking his head no, but the chief put up his hand. No, Ben, that's yours now. It's going to be 30 degrees tonight, maybe colder. Ben smiled and slid into the oversized jacket, burying his hands deep inside the pockets. Something was deep inside the left one. He pulled it forth, figuring the chief had forgotten he left it there. It was a wad of cash. He held it up to the chief, who again shook his head. "That's yours too," he said. "Go get something warm to eat. There should also be enough there to get you a room at the motel on 6 for the winter." Ben's look of shock and amazement was almost too much for the chief to bear as he bit his lips. Tears welled up in the old man's eyes as he looked at the chief in disbelief. The chief had known many men like Ben, men who had gotten lost somewhere between being a hero and unable to bear the life of being a regular Joe. They would turn to alcohol to numb that pain, alcohol that then destroys happiness, marriage, and families. It doesn't just take away your house, wife, and kids. It slowly devours your soul. Some men like Ben are left wandering, unable to put it back together. Others do unspeakable acts, taking their own lives without ever having a second chance. The chief understood this. He had served too. Ben was a stark reminder of what he could have become, and he'd be damned if he didn't at least try and help. This wasn't the first attempt either. He couldn't count the times or the cash he had lost. He didn't care either. He had never had a family, so he had plenty of money and time. "Do you want a ride, Ben?" Ben shook his head, pointing to the cart of treasures. The chief laughed. "I can try to fit it. It's up to you." Ben continued to shake his head no. "Okay, Ben," he replied. "As you wish. Just promise me no booze until you're somewhere safe and warm." Ben smiled and nodded. He had lost his ability to speak about 2 years ago. He had gone on a binge and had drank himself into the hospital. But he never saw the bill. The chief had worked it out with the hospital that his own insurance would cover it. Yes, it's a crime, guilty as charged, but... He helped Ben get the cart rolling, and he watched him disappear into the shadows. Now turning to his own car, he felt his phone vibrate. He looked at the number and thought, never a dull moment. Reynolds, what's up, Jay?
You're where?
What? He took a deep breath and thought before he said another word. Okay. Make sure he gets a full checkup before he returns to duty. If he tries to wriggle out of it, tell him it's an order. He hung up his cell and looked down again at St. Teresa's. He had had enough surprises for this month. Perhaps the entire year. He was definitely ready for this one to be over. Warren awakened to the sound of a heart monitor rhythmically beating. He went to move and found he was attached to it. The room about him was dim, and there was a distinct odor of sanitizer. Looking around to get a better idea of where he was, he moaned in disgust and started to pull off the different sensors attached to him. Don't you dare, an angry voice met his ears. It was Karen. Karen? I almost had our baby when Jake called me. What? Have to get back out on the case? Come on, Warren. They have the entire force out looking for that monster. He lay back down as another voice echoed her sentiments. Not to mention the chief forbade you from moving until you've had a complete checkup. Oh, come on, you're being ridiculous? I don't think so, Jay grumbled at him. What if Devin had been at the college when you passed out? What if he had gotten the jump on me, or whoever is hiding out up there? Are you going to explain to Sue how you didn't want to get checked out? Seriously, man, you got a kid on the way. Fine, you guys win. He looked over at the nurse. Do your worst. Don't worry, detective, we will. With that attitude, I hope she sticks the needle up your butt, Karen chimed in. Nice to be loved, Warren said with a half grin as the nurse had him get into a wheelchair. I'm going to take him for a CAT scan. No blood work? She smiled and winked at Karen. We already took that. Vampire. She made a biting notion and looked over at Karen. We're going to be a while. Why don't you steal the bed and get some rest? Karen sleepily shook her head no. I don't feel like moving. So the nurse brought her a blanket and pillow. I'll wake you when we're done. Thanks. After about 6 hours of being scanned, poked, and prodded, finally the doctor came in to see Warren.
You're good to go, Warren.
Finally. Hold on, Karen said. What? He looked pleadingly at her. Doc, nothing? No spots? He's really good to go?
Yes, Karen. We've done every test there is, and he's clean on all of them, he replied.
Then why?
I do have a theory about that, the doctor said.
Oh, this ought to be grand, Warren replied. Please, enlighten us. Warren, you're being rude.
No, it's fine, the doctor said. Like I said, it's just a theory.
Well, I want to hear it.
Warren rolled his eyes and sat back down.
Fine, go ahead, Doc.
Otherwise, if I sneeze, I'll be back here in the morning. Karen shot him an angry look. He blew her a kiss and the doctor explained.
If I recall, you experienced some deep trauma there when you were about, 14, 15?
Yeah, it was a few months after my grandfather died. So, everyone knows that story.
Yes, everyone but you, the doctor replied.
You were found wandering by Mr. and Mrs. McMillan. You didn't even remember your name.
I was in shock, doctor.
Yes, I know, he replied. But possibly, by being at the cottage, your memories tried to come back, and it was too much for you, shutting down your mind.
Come on, Doc, that's crazy.
Like I said, Detective, it's only a theory. Now, I have advised your chief that you're off duty until Monday.
Monday?
Monday. As your partner said, they're combing the entire area for Devin. They can live without you until after Thanksgiving.
Great, he thought to himself. He could see Jay smiling behind the doctor. If I didn't know better, I'd think you two were in cahoots.
Karen butted in.
Ignore him, Jay. Are you and Sue still coming for Thanksgiving Day?
Of course. Wouldn't miss it, he replied.
Good. I look forward to the company.
The car ride back to the Stevens house was a quiet one. Karen was quite miffed at Warren's flippant attitude.
I guess I'm getting the cold shoulder treatment. I wonder why, Karen replied. Look, at least I'm clean. I'm healthy. Yes, thank God for that, Warren, she replied. It still doesn't put me at ease, though.
I know. She was giving him the look.
Honest. So, what now?
Well, if they haven't caught that bastard by Monday, I'm back to work.
Karen couldn't help but pray that would be the case. She looked at the sky. Morning was only a few hours off. She'd cancel her appointments, and she would spend the day keeping an extra close eye on Warren. Part of her longed for a more simple time, like when she was a girl in her mom's arms next to the fire. Rubbing her belly and soothing her own child, she spoke to it gently.
Don't worry, little Jack. Everything will be fine. Trust Aldoni and his word.
Thanksgiving came and passed. Agnes, as sure as rain, showed up early Friday and transformed City Hall into her idea of Christmas. The two blue spruce covered in multicolored lights and red bows. The columns, here she needed help, wrapped in green garland, and a six-foot wreath placed smack in the middle of the A-frame. And each street lantern was decorated with a wreath and a bow. A creche was set up in the center of the park across from the building along with the three wise men. However, she had in line after them Santa, Rudolph, Frosty, and an assortment of Christmas characters. Even the Grinch could be seen holding a strand of garland as if decorating or de-decorating some trees. Yes, Agnes was in her heaven. With everything, it was almost too easy to forget the murders and Devon. Almost. By December 15th, they had abandoned the search in the woods and near the cottage. Some men remained stationed near Bethel and the winter residence. It was only by chance that they finally caught wind of Devon. The week before Christmas, some kids decided on a dare to break into the winter residence and found more than they expected. A carcass was strewn out on the floor near where they had found Lindsay's body. Forensics concluded it was definitely Devon. The ring, teeth, and blood all matched his records. They closed off the house for a second time. The chief determined that no one else would use the place for games or dares. He would continue to send patrols at least four times a day. After that, the town seemed to settle down, return to the peace it knew before. But as you and I both know, peaceful moments like these rarely last. As late January settled in, Old Man Cullen was seen pushing his cart of treasures along Bleecker and Main. He was making his way back to the motel when the neon sign for Al's Liquors and Smokes caught his eye. 30 minutes later, he had a pack of Marlboros and a bottle of Four Horsemen whiskey.
"Make sure you settle in someplace warm tonight," the clerk said. "We're expecting a blizzard starting around sunset."
Oh, he'd be warm tonight. More than warm, he smiled to himself. The clerk wasn't wrong either. Snow began to fall, and fast, making it hard to push his cart of treasures. Damn, he thought. No good, no good. He'd never make it. He needed someplace. He looked over at the overpass. While it would protect his cart, it wouldn't be good enough for him. He looked up and beyond it into the woods. The winter residence was close enough. And since no one lived there anymore, he could leave his stuff here and take his bottle and cigarettes through the snow and into the abandoned house. The coat the chief gave him was definitely a huge help here. He stuffed the bottle deep in his pockets, same with the cigarettes. He looked up towards the woods. At least 3 inches had already fallen in the last hour, and more was accumulating fast. Gritting his teeth, he turned into the near blinding snow and climbed up from under the overpass and towards the woods. He slid a couple times. Thankfully, the bottle remained intact. Hopefully, the woods will provide some shelter from this wind and cold that seemed to permeate every little hole in his covering. Over 2 hours, he pressed forward until he reached the lone lit lantern near the cul-de-sac. He looked down the path leading to the house and shivered. It seemed more like a tomb than a home. Cold, grayed, devoid of any of the structural beauty that Devon had designed for it. He looked back at the way he came. The snow had already buried his tracks, and the woods and roads were near impassable. Like it or not, he had made his choice, and there was no going back now.
Oh, poor Ben. The snow is falling, and the wind is blowing. And where are you going to spend your night? The winter residence. Fitting in a strange way, Snowstorm, winter residence, ha 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 ha, the irony. But let me ask you, do we really think that's such a bright idea? After all, several people have died there, Ben, and something dark lurks there. It's hungry, very hungry. Ah, well, it won't eat tonight. Perhaps next week. in Chapter 8, The Darkness That Consumes.